everyone, and welcome to Flawless, a music podcast. My name is George, and I'm here with my co-host, Liam.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Flawless.
And Grant.
Hello there, music fans.
Did we agree on team music?
Team music.
Are we going to try this?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Team music.
Yeah, that was so much enthusiasm.
So enthusiastic.
Wow. Yeah.
It's early on a Sunday morning, people.
It is.
It sure is. Each episode of Flawless, a host or a guest nominates an album they think is flawless, and we discuss how they discovered it, what they love about it, and what makes it flawless for them. We have a Facebook group. It's called Flawless Friends and Family. It's where we discuss all things music that we love, that you love, and we post in there about upcoming episodes and what albums are nominated. You can find the link in our show notes. And of course, we have a Patreon. You can back us from as little as $1 a month, and you get early access to our episodes, access to our bonus super special episodes.
And they are super special.
They are super special.
They are now coming out. The first one has come out.
First one's out. Yep, there we go. So support us on Patreon and get that warm, fuzzy feeling inside to spread the fullest love.
Content rich.
Content, yeah. We just give and give.
Sit.
So it is patreon.com/flawlessamp.
Sorry, George, just before we get started, I did want to also say we're coming to you today from Diffuse Studios for the first time, which is awesome. So our friend Jai, who's been a guest on the podcast before, runs a rehearsal space and music studio here in Brisbane. So check out Diffuse Studios. You can Google them. They're on Facebook. They're on the website. It's awesome. Thanks, Jai, for helping us get set up.
Yeah.
And this, what's the suburb? This is in?
In Woolloongabba.
In Woolloongabba.
Yeah, sorry. In Woolloongabba here in Brisbane. Diffuse Studios. It's spelled D-I-F-F-U-S-Z-E-D.
Yeah.
Studio. So check them out. Thank you very much, Jai, for
connecting
us up.
Nice to see you again, buddy.
And thanks, Jai, for washing a clean glass for me for my drink as well. That was
such is the civility in Brisbane.
Absolutely.
Service with a smile.
That's it.
So I've...
Because you're talking, well.
Yeah, I've decided I'm going to nominate an album. And because you've clicked on this episode, you already know what album this is. However, I'm going to announce it as if it's a surprise.
Yeah.
Are you ready, guys?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, I am dropping the bomb of Kate Bush, Hounds of Love.
Loving it.
Thank you, George.
There we go. So, A Woman from My Homeland, an album that came out in 1985, the year I was born.
I was going to say it's somewhere around there, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I've got back into the Kate Bush love when I picked up this album on vinyl and was like playing it on vinyl and going, oh man, why have I not brought this forward sooner? So there we go. So it's very exciting.
So the vinyl and the sides of the vinyl are very important to this album, which we will cover in detail.
Correct. So, importantly, Liam,
yes.
Had you heard of Kate Bush before?
I had heard of Kate Bush before. The only song I could tell you was Wuthering Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And if you asked me to sing it to you, I would inevitably end up singing Chandelier by Sia instead. Because for some reason, I can never remember how Wuthering Heights goes. And I know there's like a female voice doing like really high stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mind just goes, Chandelier? Like it's just, yeah. So... that's literally all I could tell you about Kate. And she's known as being one of those very emotive, interpretive dance, sort of sings with her full body style performers. And that's the two things that I know about Kate Bush. Or that I could have told you about Kate Bush before I listened to this album. But then listening to this album, I discovered I actually knew more than I thought. And we'll talk about that when it comes up.
There you go. That's exciting. So, Grant.
Babushka. Why? I don't know. But that's why I'd certainly heard of her and wouldn't have known. Wouldn't know Wuthering Heights.
Oh, you do.
I would have, or I didn't specifically look at
that
now.
You would, yeah.
Off the cuff, I was like, oh, Babushka, certainly heard it. Yes. Right. So there you go. Awesome. I had, which is unusual for when you guys pitch these albums to me and artists.
To be fair, in this case, she's a huge mainstream 80s artist. Yeah. She's very well known, not like the sort of indie underground bands we sometimes pick.
Absolutely. And she's aligned to so many artists, and so many artists have said that she has their influence. Mm-hmm. So she's very prominent. She owns herself, and she has, she was writing from the age of 11, signed to EMI at 18, after creating a demo tape with Dave Gilmour
of
Pink Floyd.
There you go.
Yeah.
I should have worn my Pink Floyd t-shirt today. Alanis Morissette, Regina Spektor, Ellie Goulding, Kate Nash, Erasure, Solange, Coldplay have all said that they have Kate Bush as an influence. And then people that have put their admiration out and are also influenced by Tori Amos, Bjork, Florence Welch, Lily Allen, Stevie Nicks, Outkast, Courtney Love, Tricky, Suede, The Sex Pistols, The Cure, Prince, Rufus Wainwright, and Block Party.
Nice. So influenced by her.
Influenced by her.
And I thought I read as well Alanis Morissette, which
we've had. George mentioned.
I missed that one. Yeah. Deep thought.
But I think like that list speaks to people about like, when you're talking about who's influencing you, it's not about genre of music and that sort of thing. It's it's more about who you are as a person and how you perform and what kind of concept of yourself that you put into your music. Like, that's why you think of Outkast and Kate Bush couldn't be further apart musically, but it's more, I assume, about how she's just her own self and her full self, and you get every part of her, and they see that and they admire that and they try to do the same thing with their own music.
Absolutely, because she is a singer, songwriter, musician, dancer, and producer.
Mm-hmm.
And she has influenced, like, her style of, so she is a dancer, but her style of dancing was so influential that Le Bois and people like that have studied her work because of her modern dance techniques that she would apply. So she would take classical ballet, mix it with jazz moves, and then interpretive dance. And that would be her music video. And I was transfixed when I was a kid, like watching these music videos. So, yeah.
So, you were a kid. Tell us how you discovered.
Yeah, the year of your birth.
The year of your birth. So, obviously, you didn't listen to it on the day it came out.
I did not.
Waiting outside the HMV.
I was not, for a change, waiting outside HMV or Woolworths. No, so basically, I don't know if there's a point in my life where I haven't known who Kate Bush is. Like, because in 85, Hounds of Love album came out with these songs, which we'll go through. But then in 86, the whole story with Wuthering Heights came out. And I am a soprano child, so I'm like absolutely latching onto Wuthering Heights as much as I can. And I'm constantly singing Heathcliff. Always... Kate Bush has always been a part of like the musical mesh of my life. But I never got into a deep dive of her music until I was much older, and more in the streaming age where I could listen to a whole album, because I was like, I know I like some of the hits, but I never really listened to the albums until I was in my 20s. So, and I picked up the whole story, and I picked up Hounds of Love. Then probably about 7 years ago, I found Hounds of Love in a op shop, charity shop, for $2.
In Brisbane?
Somewhere in Brisbane. And I found it for $2 and I was like, well, I'm having that, aren't I? Of course.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I popped that on and got really into the whole concept album, getting really immersed in it. So, Kate Bush has always been a part of my life, and the people that I think have taken from her, like Tori Amos and PJ Harvey and people like that, and Florence Welch, I think that they wouldn't have the careers that they have now if Kate Bush hadn't carved that pathway back in the 80s.
Yeah, for sure. So you had the album on CD, or you'd listen to the album in full on like a streaming service or something, and then you got it on the vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
When did you decide it was flawless? Like when you listened to it on the streaming, or only once you listened to it on the vinyl and you could do that swap sides concept stuff?
It was probably just when I was streaming it a few months ago. And I was like, because I've got Running Up That Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Hounds of Love, I've got on a couple of playlists that I go to quite a lot. So I think it was only probably a few months ago that I was like, you know what? I'm going to really pay attention to this album a bit more because I feel like it's got so much to it that I want to put forward as flawless. Yeah. And so then I started doing a bit more of a deep dive in the last few months. But I did it on streaming services. I didn't do it on the vinyl.
Right.
So I can't remember where side A and B split.
Okay.
So cool. You've got that though, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's... So you talked about it being a concept. It's like half of a concept album. So the first one, the first side of the vinyl is more... I mean, they're obviously all thematically related, but they're more... That's like the singles are all on the first side.
Yeah.
And then the second side, the second half of the album is a concept. So it's some, called The Ninth Wave, and it's a conceptual suite about a woman drifting alone in the sea at night.
Mm.
So it's sort of... And once again, it's not a concept album like we've done ones like that where they tell a story from A to B with a narrative. It's not like that. It's more just the songs are more thematically tied together. And she's obviously gone into it with that approach because she's literally named the two sides of the vinyl different things.
Well, people used to try and criticize her by saying that because she was signed to EMI so young, when she was like 18 years old, that she never had her own true voice.
Right.
But I think it's pretty clear that she has complete control.
Yeah,
over
sure.
Everything.
Yeah. I think that's a very unfair thing to say.
I think so too.
Because there's stuff on here that you almost think, I'm surprised that a major label like EMI even let her put it out.
Correct.
Like, I'm surprised they
in
didn't.
85.
And they might have. They might have tried to
shoehorn
her back, but I didn't read anything about that. But like, there's stuff on here that you would think, oh, I'm surprised they didn't stamp that or go, no, we want something a bit different. But then I think that speaks to, like, that's more the second half, I think, is you know, quote unquote, the weirder side. But the first half side is so laden with singles that they would be like, well, that's fine. We've got stuff we can work with on the first side, you know, that we can release the singles and put on the radio and stuff, that it's okay that the second side is maybe a little quirkier and a little different.
Talking of her from the perspective of being in control of everything, when she did release Wuthering Heights the following year, it went to number one for 4 weeks, and it was the first female written song that had ever gone to number one,
right?
Which was remarkable, like in the UK. So it took until 1986 before a female written song was at number one, and it was Kate Bush. So she did that, which is bloody awesome. But this album charted number 6 in Australia, 7 in Canada, 1 in the Netherlands, 2 in Germany, 1 in the UK, and 30 in the US.
I had 1 in Germany. I thought it got to 1 in Germany. But anyway,
was it 1?
Well, I thought so. I had 1 in UK, Germany, and Netherlands. That was the 3.
Oh, anyway.
Went to number 1 in.
But times 2 platinum in the UK, platinum in Canada and Germany, and gold in France and Netherlands. But there are 28 musicians. on this.
Can you imagine?
Which I did not write down.
I wrote down the, I think I could, because I'm just copying it off Wikipedia, I think I could be like the first 12. And I was like, all right, we're not going to need to know the names of like the other 16.
Well, the main one is, so Kate does the vocals, synth, and piano, but Paddy is her brother, and he plays a balalaika, backing vocals, the didgeridoo, which we'll get a mention, and violin. And then there's 11 engineers and mixers, and then the photograph on the front of the album is actually by her other brother, John.
Nice.
So it's like
a family affair.
Literally going to say it. So that's really nice. And it's in like top albums of all time, like Q, Pitchfork, NPR, Rolling Stone, Enemy. So and it's always in the like top 100 or top 20 of all those things. Bearing in mind that you're limited in knowledge of Kate Bush, but knowing that she's this like influential soprano or whatever, listening to the album for the first time, there's some bits that are going to catch you out.
Yes.
For sure.
So for the most part, first impressions, this was exactly what I expected a Kate Bush album to be. This was like, yep, this is her very clearly putting her own entire true self into stuff. But yeah, like I said, on the back half, there's some like really almost jagged bits that sort of took me back and was like, oh, I'm surprised that was on there. And yeah, but it's all really cool.
It's like tape loops and stuff.
Yeah, and like playing around with stereo, like stuff coming from left and right and jumping back and forth between the two. So if you're going to have a listen to it before the episode, make sure you pop the headphones on because there's some stuff happening in there that requires the left or right.
Yeah. So, and Grant, was it what you were expecting?
No, well, again, I hadn't heard all, if anything, Bush Babushkin, Wuthering Heights, sure, maybe. I can't remember specifically. Had no real opinion about it, but what struck me was probably how I would say brave an album it is for the time and to have gotten, you know, when you hear that some reviewers said she wasn't independent or she was, you know, signed too early and was influenced potentially adversely by EMI or whatever. I'm like, no, this doesn't sound like that at all. So I think there's some very, you know, I'll refer probably to Under Ice specifically. I'm like, wow, how does that get in on an album like this in 1985 by a lady? It's
awesome.
Certainly. Yeah, independent and very strong willed, and that comes through when you read and on media on that she is, you know. So,
fifth album,
yes,
and it was a bit of a comeback after the album before this hadn't had such great sales. So she's by this point she's already had like a career that goes up and down and has had the highs and the lows, which is really cool.
Yeah,
like we do a lot of early albums, like first and seconds, like they didn't really know anything. They just pure creativity popped it out, and did it. But she was in the middle of like, you know, of a train ride, a roller coaster up and down. So it's really interesting to see how that affects, or it feels like it didn't affect what she did on this album because it didn't feel like she was like, oh, well, I've got to get that commercial
sales
back.
She's not playing to type.
No, I'm still just going to be myself, and if people like it and it sells well, great. But if it doesn't, that's not something that seems like a factor to her.
And we usually say, because she's still producing music, but we usually say, have you seen them live?
That's what I was going to ask.
And answer is there's probably only about 5,000 people that have ever seen her live because she did one tour, hated it, and never did it again.
Nice.
So there's probably...
Are you one of those 5,000?
No, it would have been in her 80s heyday. That she had a huge fear of flying and she lost someone in a plane accident. Oh. And so there was no chance of her like going and traveling and doing anything. So, but anyway, so let's jump in.
Well, I was going to say, just before we jump in, I should have done this earlier. I posted in the Facebook group about that we were doing this album. We got some people do some comments. So I thought we'd hear their comments and see what we thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because more people should join Flawless Friends and Family and leave their comments and we can be read out on the podcast. So David Broadbent says, absolutely love Hounds of Love. The production brings an ethereal quality to an already otherworldly voice.
Mm.
Superb songwriting throughout. The line and delivery of We're Cloud Bursting Daddy brings chills every time. Philip Hawkins says, top album. I'm loving that Running Up That Hill is having another renaissance from Stranger Things. So we'll talk about that in a moment because it's the first song. So it'll be the first song we discuss. And
do you guys watch Stranger Things?
It's too scary.
I've watched the first season.
Yeah, I've
watched the first season, really liked it. Didn't watch the second one in time. Spoke to a friend when the third one came out and he said he didn't like the second one. I should just skip to the third one. But I'm a completionist on stuff that I watch.
Yeah.
So I don't want to skip to the third one. But I feel like if I watch the second one, I'm just doing a disservice to my friend who told me not to. So I figure I'll just solve both problems and just not watch it anymore.
So complex.
My brain is a complex place.
Ew.
And then Jeremy Young said, Hounds of Love is an absolute bloody masterpiece. Can't wait to hear your take on it. So
awesome.
Thank you, Jeremy, Philip, and David.
Thank you, chaps. Let's talk about why. So I nominated this album probably like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then got the news this week that because Stranger Things season 4 episode 1 features Running Up That Hill, the young people have gone out in droves and pushed Running Up That Hill to number 1 in the iTunes chart.
Stop it, the young folks.
The young folks, they've gone out and they've all bought that song.
What is young now? Do we know?
Well, it's like
Anyone for us, it's like anyone under 35.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because my version of old certainly keeps moving.
Yeah.
it's very much a moving target. So if it's under 35, that's young now.
Well, I think because it wouldn't be like 18-year-olds because it's like even 18-year-olds aren't going to go like who are listening to like hip hop and like that's what 20-year-olds are buying it. You reckon?
Yeah. No, but I know that they are because I know them. Like they're trying to tell me about Kate Bush. I have stepdaughters and their friends who are trying to tell me about this. And I'm like, yeah, where do you think I've been since 85?
Walking this planet.
Absolutely. So, but Running Up the Hill has been one of my favorite like songs of all time. So the fact that it is now... at time of recording, number one in the iTunes chart is remarkable because it fills me with joy that young people are genuinely latching on to
proper music,
latching on to
kids
some,
these days,
like an 80s kind of poppy new wave electro synthy sound, and they're connecting to it because they're replicating it in a lot of the new music that's happening right now. So they're looking to Kate Bush and going, "She's our queen." I'm like, "Yes, she is."
Bow.
Yeah. So you think about like the Triple J audience and the quote unquote like indie and alternate music for over the last 10 years has changed in the way that everything is cyclical and stuff comes around, but it's changed the sound like this. It's very synth heavy and very vocal heavy and that sort of stuff. So it's I can see why the people who've changed indie rock to sound like similar to this would gravitate. Thank you, Grant.
That's okay.
They just needed to know it was there, and now they know it's there. And Stranger Things is going, hey, check out this song, and everybody is.
Well, but Stranger Things is based in the mid 80s.
It's an 80s throwback TV show, anyway. Yeah,
so that's exactly. so it sort of fits in there, doesn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. So interesting. Since drum machine atmosphere, vocals immediately sound like I'm a classically trained singer.
Yeah.
She's described it as this song. She said, "It seems that the more you get to know someone, the greater the scope there is for misunderstanding."
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I pause after that, because there's no quote that I can drop in the song. It's like, it's a lyric, I'm going to drop it in. No, there's no vocal quote.
Yeah, so I thought that was like, and you think about marriages or long-time friendships and where you can get like the closer you get, the more misunderstanding there is. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole purpose of the song, which I thought was really cool.
Mm. So where they released it, there were some concerns about having a deal with God, using the word God in the thing. But she was just like, so I think I saw in some places they did actually release it as a single with just called Running Up That Hill. Like on the album, it just had the full thing, but on the single title, I think they got rid of a deal with God. Yeah. So, but she said, like, because it's about, I read a quote that she said, it was like about, she thinks there's like this divide between men and women in particular, and how she thinks that if there'd be a greater understanding, if they could just swap. So that's where she talks about make a deal and swap places. They'd understand, you know, men and women would understand each other if you had to live a life a mile in the shoes of the man or woman when you switch.
Sure. Yeah.
But then it's like, well, how would that happen? Well, it's not a deal with the devil because it doesn't make things worse. He's not going to do it because she thinks it'll make things better. So she's like, oh, well, it would be a deal with God. It's the opposite of a deal with the devil. And that's where she dropped a deal with God in there, but then had to sort of quieten that bit down. It's like, I'm saying God in a good thing. It's like, yeah, you can't even say God, even like you're referring to God as a God having divine power, you can't even talk about that stuff. Like, you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
At the time, in a secular song.
Yeah.
So, but this was the one I talked in the preview about. Like, this was one of the ones I didn't know I knew, and then I listened to it. I was like, oh, yeah, I know this one from the Placebo cover.
I'd heard Placebo covers,
and then I listened and was like, I know this song. And I mustn't have even. The weird thing about the Placebo cover is I went through and looked at my collection. I've got it in a collection of covers, so it must have occurred to me that it was a cover. But when I was listening to it, I didn't remember it was a cover. I was like, oh, that's a Placebo song. And then I heard it. And I was like, oh, like, obviously it wouldn't be, but it was, yeah.
Yeah.
My mind is weird. I can't figure out how Kate Bush
covered Placebo.
No, it was more that when I heard Kate Bush sing it, I was like, oh, this is the song that Placebo do. But I don't remember thinking at the time that the Placebo song was a cover. I thought it was one of theirs.
Original, yeah.
Even though it was on a collection of covers, and that's where I heard it.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't understand.
Your brain is fascinating.
My brain is, can be really weird. Placebo do an awesome version of it. Obviously not.
Well, they're still together.
Original Placebo, I think so.
Yeah,
I think they're still doing stuff.
Okay.
She sings. There's a longer quote, like basically the whole of the second verse, but which starts with "You don't want to hurt me." But there is. Which is just so beautiful. So, like, again, that dichotomy of misunderstanding of people that we're closest to, which is really cool. So I'm going to sing it at my partner every time we have an argument and see if it makes it better or worse.
There you go.
Who knows?
Cool video too. You talked earlier about her being a dancer. So she does a dance with a dancer, Michael Michael H. Well, Hervieux sounds like...
We'd have taken the first one. It's very French.
So it's... Hervio or something like it's not just Hervio.
That sounds just Spanish.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, yeah, probably is too. Anyway, she does a dance.
She does a dance. Point.
She choreographed herself. So you talked about her doing all her own things. And so she choreographed it herself. And also she was like, I saw another quote that she'd seen dancing in videos and it was just like dancing for the sake of dancing. It didn't actually communicate a message. And she really wanted to put the message of the song into the dance as well as the song itself. So she was like, she took that as a point of difference to what everyone else was doing at the time.
Definitely. Like she, as a musician, as a producer, as a dancer, as a style icon, she is constantly like influencing the people of the industry. So her interpretation, she conveys emotions with how she dresses. Like it's really important to her that she'll wear a, if she is portraying vulnerability, she will wear light chiffon and she'll float around like a fairy type creature. Whereas if she's trying to portray like somebody that's constrained, like in Wuthering Heights, she's more like tightly clothed and like even her clothing is portraying what emotion is going on for that part that she is playing. So she does it in every element of her life. I think she just can't stop. She just is conveying things and she is a message at all times.
Yeah.
But talking of covers, Hounds of Love, there was a cover of Hounds of Love that charted higher than the original Kate Bush Hounds of Love.
Don't you hate that? So rude.
So Hounds of Love was the third single, charted at number 18 in the UK. And those plucky British indie rock band, The Futureheads, did a cover of it. And it got to number 8 in the UK.
Right.
And it was the best single of 2005 by the NME and number 89 on the past 15 years.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So
I saw they did a cover, but I didn't realize it was actually like a released cover. I thought it was something they did as a B-side or a studio.
No, it went up there. It charted. It got very, very popular, and it has lyrics in it which I used to always want to desperately do. And I really love that. I'm just like, it's such a poetic, overly dramatic way of like, and I always think of like Ophelia or something like that, like taking herself into the river.
Shakespearean.
Yeah, definitely. There's lots of oohs. You know, I love an ooh. And drums, but with that marching rhythm.
Yeah, so cool, the martial drums. And lots of violin and cello too, which is really cool. Like,
yes.
That big sweep, but it's not like a full orchestra. And she does this all the way through. It's like just little pieces where she just brings in one instrument or two instruments for a song here or there. So it's not like I want to jam the whole thing in. She's just like, well, this is what it sounds like in my head. So I'm bringing this one instrument in to make it sound like how it sounds in my head.
And sometimes she uses real strings and sometimes she uses synth strings. So it's just like you have to kind of go, are they putting effects on the strings or are they playing it through the synth? Like, I will never know.
And we won't know.
No, I won't know. But she goes from whispering to wailing in Sopranos, and then the synths are holding the fort so the vocals can just go all over the place, which I really enjoy. It's like it's like the synths are this canvas and the vocals are painting on the canvas, and that's the way that the relationship works between the instruments.
That's cool. Cool description.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. You talked about all the things that she's done. She's also directed, because she directed the video for this song as well.
Ah.
So, yeah, it was actually inspired by Alfred Hitchcock's The 39 Steps. And then in doing so, she put a Hitchcock lookalike in the background of the one of the shots, in testament to the fact that he always put himself in the background of his movies and stuff. So, yeah, really cool.
That's cool.
So it's about Hounds of Love. So it's about love coming for you and you're not wanting it, so you're actually running from it. But then they're like, hounds are like, we're gonna get, it's like,
yeah,
it's a very nasty way of thinking of like falling in love. It's like, I don't want to fall in love. Like, well, you can't, love is coming to get you and it'll bite you and tear you apart. And it's like, I'm running, it'll maul you. Yeah, it was
like a pack of hounds.
Yeah, we've done songs before about like being reluctant to be in love, or like, I'm not, you know, I know you but I don't want to fall in love with you, but it's happening anyway. But this is like, no, I'm literally super scared of the very idea of it, and I'm just gonna run and run and run.
The hounds of love, the hounds are calling. Of love.
They are. It was yeah, very absolutely cool.
So yes, and so on, still on side A, the really cute track 5 is Cloud Busting.
Yeah.
So that was the second single, went to number 20. So the synth there just sounds like a harp, which I'm all for. I'm all for it. And it ramps up with the breathy backing vocals. So it's just, and it comes across as a really inspiring type track. Like, you know, it's not like a particularly romantic track or something. It just feels really inspirational. So,
yeah,
I liked it. Strings.
And then
do you guys recognize any of the lines, the vocal lines at all? I have never been so tempted to send you guys something. I really wanted to send it to you before we recorded, but like, no, our rule is we don't talk about stuff. You guys heard of the Utah Saints?
No.
Oh my god. So we talked earlier about the bonus episodes. We've done One Hit Wonder bonus episode, and when I was thinking about this, is like, I really wish I'd nominated these guys as the One Hit Wonder, because they had this one song and literally nothing else. But they take the line, I just know that something good is going to happen, and turns it into this overly hooky, trashy UK dance floor hit in like 1995. It was huge. It was really big and well known. And then they did a re-release version of it like 5 years ago or something, because it's got this amazing video and it's really cool. So I'll play it for everybody later. But yeah, Utah Saints, Something Good is,
I think I recognize the name, but yeah.
That's something maybe you recognize it. I'll play it for you guys later. But so, yeah, I just, every time I was trying to do the notes on this album, and every time I got to this song,
you heard that,
I would go to YouTube and watch the video like 3 times. And, no, go, you've got to finish the song, damn it.
Because she sings. It's just a really, like, that's what I found so inspiring about, like, listening to this particular track. But then there's, like, choir.
Like, yeah, male and female voices in a choir, which was cool.
Yeah. That she used 2 different choirs in the album. Yes, but it was like she had spoken word over the choir, and then it ends on a thunderstorm, which is like, we have thunderstorms, and referencing the sky, like, as a theme a few times across the album.
So this song was inspired by the a book she read from 1973 by a guy called Peter Reich called A Book of Dreams, and it's basically about growing up on a family farm with his father, and then, like, but told from the story of his older, told from the perspective of his older self. And like wishing you could have spent more time. And that's where so apparently the name of the farm was Organon. So she mentions that at the start of the thing. And then the cloud busting. So his father was doing like a rainmaking process that involved getting a machine to generate clouds, then put them up and then bust them once they're up there. And so that's where the cloud busting comes from. And that's where her reference to the sky. And like every time he looks at the sky, he thinks about his dad and the time he spent. So
that's lovely.
It's very nice. But like one of those, sometimes I think about if I could write songs, and then like I hear stories like that, and I've never read a book, and then go, oh, I'd love to sing a song from the perspective of this character in this book, because just it just doesn't grab me that same way. So I sometimes think
you could try next book you do.
But I feel like it should grab, if you want to do that, it should grab you. Not like, all right, I'm going to read this book, and I'm going to find a character, and I'm going to sing a song from their perspective.
No, better. Next time you're doing D&D,
yeah,
and you've got a theme in your D&D, you could write a song about like the theme and the events that happen.
You see, looking eyes and nodding his head. No, he's in.
But it hasn't grabbed me to do that so far. So maybe I'm just not a songwriting kind of person.
Yet.
That's fair enough. And then her fourth single is Big Sky.
Big Sky.
Big Sky.
Easy. Yeah. This easy is cool. Tick. Yeah.
Yeah. So sweet vocals. With matching drums, and like I can hear so many people influenced by this track, like over time. Then there's piano stomps, but piano twinkles, and then the vocal sound when she says, "You never understood me," it sounds like the way Gwen Stefani sings, you know, that "you never understood me" kind of thing. It was just that when I was listening to it, it just kept making me giggle.
Nice.
So, so that was cool. And then there's more samples, and I think they say, like, "look, a plane." And then there's an aeroplane noise that.
Yeah.
Sample that comes in with the outro of that church choir style with little guitar solo, not a big one.
Yeah, so it's like a little hair metal. So she's in the middle of the 80s, so she's great, gets a little hair metal riff.
Yeah.
Just a little one, and then like quite short, and just sort of slots it in there. And this is the one where there's a didgeridoo, but I couldn't hear it. I didn't recognize. I was like, I found out. So the thing I had said that he played didgeridoo on track 3, which is the Big Sky.
Yeah.
But I couldn't hear it. So I don't know if it's maybe the wiki entry is wrong.
Maybe, because I've got didgeridoo in Under Ice.
Okay.
It's the outro for Under Ice is the didgeridoo.
Cool.
It's at track 6 that it's the end of side A, is that right?
No, track 5. So Cloud Busting is the last song.
Cloud Busting is the last one.
Yep, so the ninth wave starts with track 6 and Dream of Sheep.
So, and Dream of Sheep is 2 minutes 45 and just sounds like a piece of classical music as it opens.
Yeah, just piano and her vocals to start.
Yeah.
Which I think is like, that's that way you can tell that it's like a second piece part almost two. Starting up. It's you'd lead into it with that side on on the vinyl.
And there's a brief piece of drama at the 1 minute mark, and then it all settles down and goes into the guitar playing the outro for that one. So it starts with the piano and it ends with the guitar and piano, and it's just like a really pretty ending.
I don't think it's a guitar. I think that's a bouzouki, because they say he plays the bouzouki on track 6, assuming the wiki is correct. So it's a Greek long-necked It's a Greek long-necked lute.
Cool.
So it sounds like a guitar, obviously. It's got a similar plucking sound.
String instrument.
Yeah, but it's... That's cool. And it's got whistle. There's like a slide whistle thing in here as well. On this track.
Oh, yeah.
So this one's got a really cool lyric.
Lyric buddies.
Nice. Yeah, I really like that. I can't be left to my imagination. Like, I know some people like that. It's just like you can't leave them alone. Can't have, like, you know, they've always got to be busy and doing stuff because, their imagination, and for good and bad, grabs
hold. That's why I can't watch scary things, because my imagination's way worse than anything that they can portray on the screen.
So you see it and then it gets worse.
And I see it and then I'm like, well, that's better than I was thinking, but I still didn't enjoy the experience.
Not sure.
Grant,
yes.
Have you got any double ticks that we haven't talked about yet, or any?
Oh,
any
Jig of
big
Life,
stuff?
Come on,
Jig of Life, yeah, hey? Nice.
Like
starting with the fiddle,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, like She's playing the man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, string theme. I'm like, okay. So yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed Jig of Life and the closing track, Morning Fog. I thought were also two really good.
Yeah. So Jig of Life, the vocals that I could, like when you said Tori Amos before, like that reminds me of Tori Amos, except obviously Tori, you know, not the other way around. Same as the placebo thing. It's like Tori borrowed a vocal delivery possibly, but listening to her vocals on that really reminded me of that. And then it's like a traditional folk tale, and there's like these big pounding drums, and then it cuts out for just her vocals, and then John Carter Bush doing like a narration, like a spoken word narration of it, which is also very folk tale style thing. Yeah. So that was
And there was a fiddle solo.
Mm-hmm.
It's dancey.
It is dancey because it's a jig.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But there's hand claps, people.
Yeah.
We know how I feel about hand claps.
None of us.
And then the singing with growly bits as well, like it's got everything.
It's a great track.
So yeah, having those and being dominated by male vocals actually works really nice, like we're considering like the weight of her voice in the whole album. Like he does it all with that Irish accent kind of thing, for the jig, and he sings Catch Us Now for I Am Your Future, and I'm like
yeah,
I like it.
Yeah.
So Oh, but then there's that moment where it's all jig, all jig, all jig, and then silence, and she says,
"I put this moment here. I put this moment here. I put this moment
over here. Over here."
With intent.
Nice.
With intent. And so there's this deliberate silence. This is her owning her voice.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that you don't get away with if you don't have your own agency. You know?
Yeah, like, yeah. But this is like the thing, like you front load the album with four out of the five songs.
Yeah,
first side. Half of the album were singles and totally legitimately, like those are good singles.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a bit of freedom to play around and
for sure.
do different things and really follow your creative voice on the second
And if
album.
You take it back to the era where, you know, you're not listening to it just on your phone, carry cash. You committed.
Yeah.
And you listen to the first few little ones, you're going to go, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, four of the five sides, the first side you're listening to, you're sold, done. Of course it's going to sell well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But people have really latched on to all of the breakthrough stuff that she's done in the second half of the album, like, and have incorporated. So when it starts with Waking the Witch,
where good one too.
We have so many different things, like
that's a dark song.
Yeah. It's madness.
It is madness.
There's tape loops and growling. She does these sweet vocals about roses.
Yeah.
But then church bells ringing behind chanting.
Mm-hmm.
There's male grunts with female wails. Latin, like chanting. And I said, it's like an exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
Like as a song.
There's a Kate Bush Encyclopedia website, like which literally lists all of every one of her songs when she's performed them studio, how many studio edits, that sort of stuff. So they think it's a dramatization of a witch trial.
Which is
in a similar sort of vein.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But then also Kate has said that it's about lots of different voices telling someone to wake up. Like all the different ways you can wake up, from like someone just whispering to you, to someone shaking you, to someone like, let's go, child, to you being in a nightmare. And all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, you sort of fell asleep at the desk at school and the teacher says, wake up, child, pay attention. I couldn't get a helicopter anywhere because there's a helicopter noise in it. So she goes, I couldn't get a helicopter anywhere. And in the end, I asked permission to use the helicopter from the wall from the Floyd. And it was the best helicopter I'd heard for years and years.
Oh,
and they said yes. Wow. So, more Pink Floyd.
More Pink Floyd stuff. References.
Your mates, your mates.
You know, linking it back to Kate. Kate was a ballerina. I was a ballerina and I did a ballet recital to a Pink Floyd track.
Nice.
When I was about 13.
So there's the triangle.
There's the triangle between me, Dave Gilmore and Kate Bush. I was looking for it.
Basically.
Well, now I finally have it.
And Robbie Coltrane does one of the voices as well, which he's really cool. I think. I don't know if he's actually a good person or not, but he's been in lots of cool stuff. I don't want to go, he's awesome, and then it turns out while I haven't been paying attention, he's like secretly a Nazi or something.
An arsehole.
So he does cool stuff when you watch him do
cool stuff. Cool stuff. Watching You Without Me, the percussion, but with this I don't know what instrument it is, but it sounds like a xylophone or something coming in, and the vocals are humming into soft, sweet singing, and it's really high-pitched in layers, which is really lovely. And there's random yelps and woofs, and lots of oohs and lahs and stuff like that, which, again, you know I love. And she sings...
I'll let you know what's been happening. There's a ghost in our home, just watching you without me. I'm not here.
I'm like, it feels like there's an absence in a relationship or something happening. And there's noticing the void, and but the void is watching you being separate from each other. And I just thought it was a really smart and interesting way of conveying that kind of thing. But yeah, that's cool.
Just keeping an eye on the time. Anything, any other big songs you want to go through, George?
Well, there's just her penultimate track is the epic number of Hello Earth.
Mm-hmm.
With all those American radio sample intro. Mm-hmm. It's super 80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gorgeous vocals when she starts.
I get out of my car, step into the night, and look up at the sky. And there's something bright, traveling fast. Just look at it go.
And the way she sings that is just so beautiful. And there's a mixed choir interlude, piano vocals, call and response with the choir, and then singing in Welsh, and more samples and atmosphere with the final vocals of her coming, going back to the Waking the Witch. This one is Go to Sleep, Little Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so this nighttime obviously means a lot to her. So. Yeah. Yes, so I just wanted to address the penultimate track before we go into that very sweet ending.
Really nice.
The Morning Fog.
The last song, The Morning Fog, almost the most straightforward song on the album. Like, it's just drum and guitars and bass and just her singing. It's sort of, good, like these throbbing bass lines, and it's like the flamenco, really sparsely plucked acoustic stuff, but they don't... there's not a lot of playing around with studio tricks and samples and that sort of thing as opposed to all the other ones.
Yeah, it is a poppy tune, isn't it? It's a really sweet poppy tune. And you needed it after Hello Earth, which was the epic number. You needed something sweet. So it's 2.5 minutes. But it's, again, another inspiring one of I'm falling and I'd love to hold you now. I'll kiss the ground. And then she goes on to tell all the different people she tell about the fact that she's agreed to fall in love now.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really sweet because is it real love if you haven't told everyone around you?
Sure. Is it wholesome if you haven't told anyone around you?
Mm. So I think we've covered a fair amount of this epic album. So
you'd like to give us your final pitch?
Her as an individual has been an influence for artists, designers, dancers, just so many people that I think that she as a standalone person is flawless.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome. Her work is groundbreaking, but she's always evolving over time. So if you listen to music, you can from 30 years ago, and then you listen to music from 10 years ago, you'll know it's Kate Bush, but you'll hear a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
So she's genre bending, the fact that she can bring all these different sounds together. Her voice is unlike anything else. Her breadth of being a writer, composer, musician, and producer. So despite having strong 80s vibes, I'd say that a lot of these are pop tunes that are largely timeless. If you think about the music that's being made today, and young people are still drawn to it, which I think is incredible. And people that loved it back in the day still love it today. I think the concept running through and having all the poppy hits at the beginning and then going all conceptual is awesome, and it's a really... It's just so nice to know that a woman was in charge of herself and the work that she was delivering, and she wasn't being hamstrung by anyone, and she crafted something so beautiful. So it blends influences and technology to create a landscape which I will be continuing to listen to until my dying days. That's
nice. I feel like I should deserve to clap.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Standing ovation.
Yeah,
sure.
we're all literally standing. There we go.
There we go. Okay. Yes. So, Liam,
yes.
Would you like to tell me how you feel about this album?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess as someone who hadn't paid a lot of attention to it, like obviously, like you said, she's a big influence on a lot of people. But I've always gotten the impression she was also a bit of a punchline for people, because it was like she's so emotive and she's doing the interpretive dance and, you know, very sort of flowery and emphatic and that sort of thing. So I think a lot of people, so that's like part of my first impression, not of the music, but just of her. So it was really awesome to come in and go, actually, no, she's not just a performing artist who was really well known. She's actually super influential on a lot of people, which I didn't know until I actually did the research and found out that, you know, lots of people take the elements, not just musically, but obviously, like I said, personality-wise and inspiration-wise. I don't think it is timeless. I think it sounds very 80s to me, which is not neither here nor there about whether it's flawless or not. But for me, I'm listening to going, yeah, there's the way the synths are used and the way certain things do things is like, oh, yeah, this is very 80s. So that was all cool. Love the first half, like the four singles. And Mother Stands for Comfort, which we didn't talk about, is cool. It's like a bit of a downbeat one compared to the other ones, but it's still cool. The problem is I didn't love from... and Dream of Sheep. So I liked them, but I was missing something, mm-hmm. and I don't know what it is, and it's stupid to go, because they're not, I guess, constructed as songs like you would normally think of, like a song with like a beginning, middle, and end sort of thing. Like they're more just like her being very expressive and putting little pieces in here and there. But yeah, from there, from Ice and then Waking the Witch, I thought was cool, but it feels like there's just so many, there's too many things happening, and it's very loud and noisy and chaotic and devilish, and then... And then Watching You Without Me as well didn't grab me until The Jig of Life. I sort of got right back into it. And the last three I really loved. But just in that middle section at the start of the interpretive stuff, the concept stuff, I got a little lost. And I was thinking about if I was listening to it back, would I probably skip through some of that stuff to get to Jig? And I probably would.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I love the album. And it was like, we say this all the time, but it's like, it's amazing to have been introduced to something that I didn't really think of at all. And now I really love it. But I couldn't give it flawless.
That's okay. Thank you very much. That was robust.
Yeah.
Robust. Yes, there we go.
It was robust. So, Mr. Grant.
Yeah. I probably had, from a understanding or impression of Kate, I would have thought, I was like certainly an influencer more so than maybe what you're, that you thought, I suppose, Liam. I don't like agreeing too much with Liam. But there are elements of... Like the first five, and Mother didn't stand out for me as well. Mm-hmm. I thought, hey man, Mother stands for comfort. Why put that in there? I think that dichotomy almost.
I did think Mother Stands for Comfort is a cool concept of a song, like a mother. We didn't talk about it, but it's like a mother standing up for you, and you know, you always go to your mother, and she always forgive the darkest parts of you. Hopefully, not everyone's mother is good like that.
And you can fib to her, and she knows.
Yeah, she knows.
It's a really intimate look at the relationship between a mother and daughter.
Yeah, so I did like it conceptually, even if it didn't quite musically and sonically have the same tone as the rest of the first half.
Mm. And then we went. I thought you referenced like the big themes. I thought we go from the clouds to sheep to ice to earth, and I'm like, wow, there's a lot packed in here. But your description of probably skipping over and Dream of Sheep and Under Ice, certainly, I was like, man, I really liked Waking the Witch.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was cool. And you know, it was discussed, but loved. I almost got like double ticks. Space, double ticks, up to a Jig of Life, Hello Earth, yeah, okay, but in Morning Fog, great closing. But yeah, it was that sort of second half. And did they need to be such as, you know, all up front and then that theme at the second turn? So I'm not going to say it's flawless, but there's some really cool tracks in there. And thank you very much for bringing it. And the three that put their thoughts on the family and friends site. Sorry, but thanks for your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Cool beans. Thank you very much. Well, we didn't get Kate Bush, Hands of Love over the line, but we did have a good natter about
for
it.
For sure.
So that's all good. So importantly, I want to thank everyone for listening. We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are Flawless AMP on all of those. So you can join the conversation, share or like our posts, give us a rating. Every little bit helps us find more music lovers like you. As mentioned, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/flawlessAMP. If you would like to back us, please check that out for all the bonus episodes. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.